Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig it.
Stop. Right on.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And wow, do I sound a little strange, huh, Sandy? Oh, hey, good morning, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
You sound like you've just been in the swimming pool.
I've been here and there. I've been to and fro. And
little horse.
Yeah, you know, good morning is Mondays. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it today. Over the weekend, I contracted something. And you know, I'm just going to have to fight it off. I've got my trusty airborne with me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've pushed my chair back a little further from the table. I've got the mic extended about as far as it'll go.
Well, you know, on the way here, did you notice the
snow?
I'm dreaming of a white. Snow.
Yeah, I know. It was when I was leaving my home, it was just like an occasional flake. But coming out here, there was some actual, real, perceptible snowfall.
You know, I don't know. It's got to be one of the earliest.
There are occasional flakes at my house all the time.
Yeah.
That's not winter. That isn't snow either. That was a pun.
I will tell you this. We're going back to 60-some-odd degrees later on in the week. We really have been colder than normal. I hope that's not a sign. I mean, towards the end of September, October, and during October, and I hope it's not a sign.
You mean a sign of a cold winter?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I want it to be cold enough for my ice rink and not so cold that it's too cold to use it. So I've got a pretty precise temperature range I want the winter to be.
Well, if it's
15 to 30. That's it for me. That's my range.
15 to 30. Well, yeah, you can have snow, 15 degrees.
Yeah, I'm not worried about snow.
But there are folk who want snow. And so you can have them both, right?
No, I just want ice.
Yeah,
like I said, I've got this ice rink I tend to in the winter, and so when you're an ice rink steward, you're prone to think about the temperatures and the weather in a little different way.
Well, you're going to get ice. There's no question whatsoever. You're going to get ice. We're going to get ice, and there's no way that we cannot get that.
Speaking of bad news. The Packers.
So I was saying to you earlier, I watched the entire game, and Packer fans are spoiled, and they were booing, and I get it.
You and I went through 15 to 20 years of Packers struggling to get a winning season.
Yep.
You know, with quarterbacks like Majakowski.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not in anyone's Hall of Fame, I'll tell you that.
Don Majkowski,
I mean, yes.
But he was, what was the
magic.
Guy?
Magic, they called him Magic.
Who was the guy who played for the Wisconsin Badgers, and he was the quarterback?
Yeah.
Randy Wright,
yeah.
Yeah, he was actually a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I know.
So there were some eras.
And he wasn't even an All-American at Wisconsin.
No.
He was just a guy.
So there were some eras that we went through with the Packers that some Packer fans don't know about. It hasn't always been title town, totally. And over the last, like you said, 30 years, Packer fans have been spoiled. And I think is it too early to write their epitaph?
No, it's too early to write their epitaph. I looked in the league, so I'm thinking, wow, that was really we got a mediocre start. So then I started looking at the league standings, and most of the league leaders are 3-3 in their division, and most of the divisions of the NFL, the NFC East has, you know, a 5-0 or 6-0 Philadelphia, but that's it. All the other teams. So I don't know whether you can call it parity or you can call it mediocrity, but clearly parity is here in the league, and the defenses are taking over. All the games are very close. Most of the games are low scoring. You know, here we were 3-3 at halftime.
I know. You know, Sandy. Over the years we've watched the NFL rulemakers and lawmakers tinker with everything to make it possible for the offenses. People like action. It's like when I go to a Brewer game, I don't want 1-0, right? People say, oh, what a great game. Great game to me is 15-14. Some action.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've in all of athletics, they make it possible to make sure that there's action. And so the NFL has, over the years, kind of made all these adjustments to make sure that the offenses can do whatever it is they want to, and the defenses are, you know, at the mercy of the offenses. But as you stated off the air, the way the defenses now are structured.
Well, I think defense, the complications in football used to all be about offense, right? We think about the offense being so complicated,
right?
But actually, the defensive schemes are exceedingly, if not complicated, they're sophisticated, and the way they mask what they're actually going to have as compared to what they're actually going to play has become increasingly sophisticated. And I think that's one of the problems. Aaron Rodgers has always been good, not only because he can pass very well, but because supposedly he can look at what's out there, figure out what the defense is going to be. He can audible to the right play like Peyton Manning,
right.
Like Peyton Manning used to be able to do, and so he can pick apart the defense's scheme and come up with the right play. And obviously we're not doing that now. And you can say, well, is that because our offensive scheme isn't able to adjust? I think it has more to do with the defenses being able to much better mask what they're doing, because the defenses are doing this to the league all the way across. This whole Kyle Shanahan, the coaching tree that had this new offense, I was looking at the results there, and only the Rams out of that whole offensive coaching tree have a good record going now. The guy Hackett that was our coordinator last year is at Denver, and wow, they're not burning up the league, and either is San Francisco, and either are the Packers, so I think defenses have caught them. It has to do with pay structure. You know, they spend so much money on quarterbacks now that the offense has trouble finding money to pay other players. So now we got in our system, we've got high-paid running back, high-paid quarterback, high-paid left tackle.
Right.
That's it.
Well, that's all you. When you're paying quarterbacks $30 to $40 million dollars a season,
right?
That's almost one third. In some instances, one third of the entire payroll, and so, you know, quarterback can't do it by himself. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Morning, guys. First off, we the people are the government. Ultimately, we must never forget that. Second, I hate to burst the bubble because I love talking about the Packers, but I do want to inject politics right off the bat.
So we're going to get to politics after. After this break, Tom. So you're welcome to call after we're about to go to a break.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Call back. But Sandy, I'll tell you, man. I wonder how the Packers because they got a tougher schedule coming down the road, and just based on the way I was looking at Rodgers and his thumb, that may be trouble for the rest of the season. The other thing that I would ask you, Sandy, is maybe they'll rethink not playing any of their players during the preseason.
Well, it might have to do with the preseason, but we're now we're six. Now we're six games in. So we had a let's say we the first three games were preseason, and now we're three games right. into the regular season. I think it has more because I think it's this is league wide, and I think it has a lot to do. Also, the way teams are playing, they have to play conservatively with respect to injury because they got a 17 game season right. or whatever the heck they're now playing, and so that. Also, I think, is changing the way they go at things. For instance, Aaron Jones not carrying a big load every game. Well, they don't want Aaron Jones to go down for the season, right? Running backs are vulnerable, right. so they're obviously going to be a little spare, even though they've got two great running backs.
The battering ram. But the battering ram is not getting enough carries either.
No, I know.
Between the two of them, they're getting 20 carries, which leads me to believe that Matt LaFleur is kind of caught between, hey, we've got Aaron Rodgers for another 2 years, or because he drafted for them to be a running team.
Well, also, my understanding of the offense now is that the quarterback goes to the line of scrimmage with a running play that maybe the running play's been called or a passing play's been called, but they will audible to either the run or the pass depending on what defense they're seeing.
Right.
So if they've called a running play in the huddle, they come to the line of scrimmage, the defense looks like it's much better suited for a passing play. Rodgers will audible to a passing play, and I think that's where the defense is now caught up because they've masked what their defense is going to be. Aaron has decided wrongly that it's actually a pass weak defense, and he's audible to the pass, and so it doesn't work. So, or he's audible to the run, and the run doesn't work because they've masked the fact that it was actually a run defense.
So I will say to you that Matt LaFleur, I think, is a pretty strong-willed guy, and even as young as he is,
mm-hmm.
and I think that he would not want Aaron to continue to audible his plays. That could be a problem, too. I think that eventually that's going to be a problem.
Well, I think maybe audibles will become less significant because when it gets harder to read the defense, maybe the audible makes less difference because you make an audible to switch from run to pass or pass to run, and meanwhile you misread the defense.
Right, and if the play doesn't work, then you know, the coach is second-guessing, hey, why didn't you stay with what we had?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, we've got to go to a break, 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. So, you know, Sandy, you wanted to talk about it's something you wanted to touch.
Well, yeah, when you watch a campaign and you see people talking about, for instance, there's more crime, so we need more police. Okay, to me that kind of reminds me of us if we were sitting around saying there's more fevers in the United States, we need more Tylenol. You know, it's like taking a symptom and treating it rather than looking for the cause. Ironically, in the United States, I think when the drug problem reached the suburbs, instead of talking about more police to deal with the drug problem, we started talking about more mental health and and we started talking about the drug problem like it was a disease rather than a crime. And so I think the way we talk about things has a lot to do with the way we prefer to look at them rather than actually being responsive to solving the problem. If we wanted to solve the problem of fevers in the country, we try to figure out what causes the fever. Is it COVID? Is it flu? What is it? And then we try and deal with that disease and see if we can't solve for it, rather than just distributing Tylenol to people as a defense against fever. We do have a crime problem in the cities of the United States. And police is a Band-Aid that you apply to a wound, is like the Band-Aid you apply to a wound. It doesn't solve the wound. It simply deals with it in a way. And police deal with crime, but they don't solve for crime. The fact is that there's a reason underlying why there's more crime in the cities. And it isn't that there aren't enough police. You know, we don't worry about the number of police that exist in Brookfield, Wisconsin, because there isn't an underlying crime problem in Brookfield, Wisconsin. If there were an underlying crime problem in Brookfield, Wisconsin, I'm confident that people would try and attack the cause of the crime problem. If the crime problem in Brookfield, Wisconsin was drug use, they'd start dealing with the causes for drug use. But when it happens in this place over here, the city of Milwaukee, the knee-jerk response of everybody else is, well, it's just more police. Let's send the army in. You know, let's put more weaponry in the hands of the people who will then oppose the criminals. But instead of working on, let's cut down the number of the amount of criminal conduct we have.
You know, Sandy, as a man who's lived in Milwaukee all my life, and what you just said, many of us have been echoing for decades, and they're falling on deaf ears. And because people don't want to think that there's another reason other than just these are just bad people. And it's easy to say that, right? It's easy to say that. It's more difficult to say there's a problem here that is not going to be solved with law enforcement. For instance, I always say that when a young boy gets arrested or a young man gets arrested, when he's a young boy and he gets arrested and he goes to juvenile because of things that are happening, maybe stealing this or stealing that, but he starts to develop a record. And so he continues to do that. And then by the time he's 18 years old, he's gotten into a habit of doing some bad things. And now he does something at 18 years old, and we finally get him. And he's an adult now, and our judicial system says, we finally got him. We finally got Connor. Oh, I'm sorry. We finally got Earl. We've been waiting on him a long time. And they celebrate, and they lock him up. We're going to lock him up forever. And they get excited about that, but they fail to understand, you know, Earl's got two or three brothers coming up in the same environment that produced him.
Well, and we worry about the money that we would spend on the social programs, the things that we might do to get at the cause of crime rather than putting people in jail. But that fails to look at the actual, let's look at it from a hard line, just dollar and cent standpoint. It costs us over $40,000 a year to incarcerate somebody. And if we turned around and spent money like that at an earlier stage, we could avoid, you know, the $40,000 a year someone goes away to jail for 10 years. That's let's say it's $500,000 of total cost associated with that whole process. Is that the way we want to spend our money to deal with this problem? If we just look at it from a dollar and cent standpoint. And so my view is that, you know, I have always said that the question why is the most important question we should ask. And so, we, you know, it's a second tier question. You know, why more police? Because we have more crime. But there's a second question then. Why more crime? What's that problem? When we have this problem with defense expenditure, and we have more problems in the world. Why more problems in the world? let's look at what is American conduct participating in that. We have more autocrats emerging in the world. Why more autocrats? We have Trumpism in the United States. It's not just because of Donald Trump. We have Trumpism. Why do we have Trumpism? We all need to ask our second-tier why questions so we can get to the actual cause, because Trumpism is not a function of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is part of the symptom, as is Trumpism, of a situation that we have growing in the United States society that, breeds people who want to think like this, who do think like this. They don't even want to. The same is true on the flip side. We have more crime in the cities. Why do we have more crime in the cities?
So for the people who call here constantly and say, we need more police, I always say to them, and you stated, $40,000 a year to lock a person up that is eventually going to be released. Almost all the people who are locked up don't get locked up for their entire lives. They're released back into the society.
Right.
So what's and once you're released and you have a criminal record, your chances of finding a viable. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And so Sandy and I are talking about what I think is an important way to look at things, no matter what the issue is, no matter what it is.
Why? The question why, and it seems like we as Americans don't get there in the political discourse. We don't get into the background reason why. We just get into the symptoms. So, if you're in the automobile business and your car sales go way down, you could decide, well, all I'm going to do is advertise more and I'll sell more cars. Or you might actually roll up your sleeves and look at your cars and compare them to the other cars and figure out what's wrong with the car you're selling and the product you're producing to decide that maybe there's some changes you have to make. And that's what businesses do, is they actually roll up their sleeves and look at things. But when we get into politics, we don't seem to be willing to roll up our sleeves and look at the problem. We just look at the symptom. In healthcare, happily, we don't just distribute Tylenol when there are more fevers around the country, because people do roll up their sleeves far enough to say, why are there more fevers? But here we have Trumpism in the country. We as the body politic ought to roll up our sleeves and say, why? What are they responding to? We have crime in the cities, and it's much more dominant there than it is elsewhere. We ought to roll up our sleeves and say, why is that happening? We have all of these problems in the country, and instead of trying to roll up our sleeves and say why, we simply point at the problem. Public schools are not getting good results. Okay, let's shut down public schools. Well, that's not saying why. Public schools aren't causing this problem. Everyone knows, if they did an analysis of it, that it's a sociological problem that sits behind the schools, and it's not the schools themselves that are the problem. But that's not the way we deal with it. It's not the way we're dealing with crime. More police. More police isn't going to get, it's simply going to put more people in prison. And you pointed out, both on and off the record, didn't you? I think you could recite that again. I mean, putting someone in jail has a cascade of other social problems, and we aren't solving the problem that put that person in jail.
Let's bring Tom in. Hey, Tom, what's going on? You say what?
Hey, good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, I want to know what the callers think about someone that's running for governor calling the people of Wisconsin lazy. That really, really made my jaw drop, because if he's saying that in public, what's he saying in private? I mean, this is someone that... Wisconsin is known for its work ethic. You go to any other place in the country and you say you're from the Midwest or you're from Wisconsin, they usually want to hire you on the spot because of the fact that your work ethic is so ingrained and so good. And I don't care if it's employed or unemployed people. People in Wisconsin are not lazy.
Well, Tom, let's,
so for this guy let's face it, though,
Tom, that was a dog whistle, wasn't it? He was calling
it was a dog whistle.
He was calling the people in Wisconsin lazy, but he was blowing a dog whistle aimed at. And I think everyone who heard him say that knew that it was a dog whistle. And so that's, to me, that's the worst part about it, is that it's just another piece of evidence of what is going on, which is essentially the Trumpism, which is to
The way he talks in public, Sandy, I don't know how he talks in private.
I'll tell you what,
Democrats ought to be running on this thing 100%,
because
I'll tell you what, it attacks the whole character of the state of Wisconsin.
Hey, Tom, it is not going to make one iota of difference, because there are people in the state who agree with Ron Johnson and the Republican direction. That's just the way it is. You know, you listen to the things Ron Johnson says, and no politician in his right mind this close to an election would be making the kind of statements that Ron Johnson is making. Their death knell.
Well, but both Michaels and Johnson are talking, it's all part of what I was just talking about, which is it's this...
They're talking to a certain group of people.
It's the rural, exurban versus the urban, and lazy is what people in the urban sector are accused of being. No one accuses rural and exurban Wisconsinites of laziness, but the problem of crime and the problem of poverty is dog whistled away, and unfortunately, there's a large political movement that feels that way, and I think these people aren't doing it because they think it's going to make them unpopular. I think they're saying things like this because they think it's feeding to their base and making them popular. So my question is, what do we do about that? Because that's the problem.
But what I would say, Sandy, though, is that independent voter, the one that's going to turn this election in terms of which way it goes, and, you know, 30% of the state or whatever might be MAGAs and all of that. But the thing is, there's people that are sensible Republicans out there that if they hear that someone that wants to run the government, that wants to cut public education completely and privatize all of it, have two educational systems, all of these different things that should wake people up very, very loudly. If I was Governor Evers, I'd be running
Tom,
I'd be playing it over and over again.
All of that information is out there. Everybody is aware of it. There's even a blind person can see. But let me finish my point.
That's part of the divide and conquer,
Tom,
strategy.
Even a blind person can see what they're talking about and whom they're talking about, but yet even in the face of that, they're still winning.
So that's
my point, is that,
but being somebody that's from the rural part of Wisconsin, and the number of people that have called me this weekend from the rural part of Wisconsin that are also Republicans that have said, how dare him call us lazy? How dare he attack another Wisconsinite by calling people lazy? That right there, I'm telling you, was not received well by those people.
I hope that's right, Tom, but my sense is that those words were even chosen with some care, and that it wasn't a faux pas, and that unlike the success that was had with the word deplorable when Hillary Clinton used it, she was aiming that word deplorable at a large sector, what could construe themselves as a large sector, and those deplorables were all the anti-elite sort of white population. When he uses that term, everybody in the state pretty much understands who he's aiming that language at, and instead of taking affront from it. So I think the Democrats are playing into the hand. If they start using that language as the assault on him, as the reason to vote against him, I almost think they're playing into his hands, because it's just repeated.
You have to blanket into the fact that he wants to privatize education.
Let me say this, man. I resent, as a man of color, and I know who the dog whistles are directed towards, I resent the fact that that can be said publicly, as if people of color who live in this state don't understand what this is. And so many of us have said this for decades, that this exists in this society. And now it's out in the open. And so there is no shame with people feeling that way about others, whether they can back it up with facts or not. And so now, yeah, there are people who see it in broad daylight. And yet, even in the face of that, he's still winning. And so from my perspective, when and if people will say this, we know what's at the root of this, and I disagree with the way this is being done, do I disagree enough to make the decision that, you know, we can't accept a guy like Ron Johnson saying these kinds of things? It's not right. We can't accept Tim Michael saying these kind of things. It's not right. Because they do impact and affect others, man. They impact and affect my community.
It is.
Well, not just, again, I would say, because they were talking about the unemployed, I get the dog whistles and all that kind of stuff. But what I got from that whole debate was Wisconsin's going to change its name to the Tim Michaels Corporation. The Michaels Corporation. How many times could you say that word? I mean, if you guys want your state to be run like a corporation where it's about all for profit and you're not getting the profit and everything's being privatized, then, you know, go ahead and vote for Tim Michaels.
They're going to do that.
If you want someone that actually believes in we the people and believes in the public and believes in the public square, then you know what? Vote for Tony Evers.
Look, man, the majority of the people are going to vote for Tim Michaels, and they're going to vote for Ron Johnson.
I disagree, Earl. Okay, so, I disagree. I think the people of Milwaukee and Madison are going to show up in record numbers, and I think they're going to get out and vote and not vote these guys in. That's what it's going to take.
Thank you very much for the call.
You got to vote.
I really appreciate it. Hey, Fred, how you doing from Cottage Grove? How you doing, sir?
Good morning. Yeah, we're getting snow, too. We just did a road trip along the River Road to St. Croix.
Okay.
And I'd say the Evers and Mandela signs outnumbered the Ron Johnsons and everybody else by 10 to 1. It was unbelievable. The only place we saw a lot of Ron Johnson stuff was when one little village, and they were clustered in a vacant lot, 50 of them anyway. So I don't know if nobody wanted them and they're out there for taking or what, but the only place you did see the Rojos and everybody else was the farms in the rural. It's like, what's with these people? But honest to God, there was more Mandela and Evers signs.
So if signs were the harbinger of who's going to win an election, I would be excited about that. But, you know, go ahead.
Well, it appears that supposedly that's the Republican side of the state, right?
I don't know much about the entire state, and so I don't know what side is Republican or what side is Democrat. I think is there such a thing, Sandy, as a Republican side of the state and a Democrat side of the state?
Well, you know, there didn't used to be, but there kind of is now. You can paint large metropolitan areas blue, and you can paint the rest of the state red, and that's pretty much the way the state looks. So most of there are only about 5 metropolitan areas in the state, and everything else is pretty red.
So the numbers of the people who live in the metropolitan areas outnumber the people who live in the rural areas. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we've seen the results. The if you take the whole state, what do we got? 5.5 million people.
Right.
About half of them live, a little more than half of them live in these metropolitan areas. But the metropolitan areas aren't pure blue.
Right.
And so that's how the suburban areas get such sway, because they're the purple part of the state. And so the suburban populations within the metropolitan areas are large. In the Milwaukee metro area, more people live in suburbs than live in
right.
the city.
Well, clearly, I mean, there was a time when those people's families lived in the cities. They eventually moved to the suburbs. It's how Milwaukee got to be as small as it is with the exodus.
Yeah,
People whose families used to live in the cities and moved to the suburbs.
Well, also just a function of the municipal boundary lines are much smaller than the metropolitan area.
Yeah.
So, I think we can use signs as something we can read. We can take the temperature that way. And polls are another way. This Marquette poll is another way of taking the temperature. And however, Election Day is the comeuppance day.
All right, Fred, thank you for the call. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, you asked the question why on all of these different subjects, and we all should be asking the questions why. Because we saw this transformation in this country and with people and with that middle class, we know what was at the root of why the MAGA people and the people in the rural areas feel the way they feel. We know something happened. You say, why? Why did the farms wind up going out of business? Something occurred that put those farmers out of business. Why did the paper mills go out of business? Who made the decisions, and why? And why did it happen at the time that it happened? And what has been the fallout of the fact that they shut down the paper mills and the middle class lifestyles of those who lived in the suburbs? And so, why? Who was at the root of that? Was there some political decisions made, or did just something fall down from heaven that said, it's time to change all these things up? Something happened that created all of the and transformed the people's lives inside of our nation. And that's why I was talking or saying to you about this article that I read in today's New York Times this morning called Globalism Failed to Deliver the Economy We Need. I remember distinctly when they started talking about globalism and all of those different things, and we had to do that and the reasons why. And I don't know if the people who created it, Sandy, ever thought it would have the kind of impact on the American people that it's wound up having. You say what to that?
Well, I read the article, and
what are your thoughts?
I disagree with her. I don't disagree with her because I think she's wrong exactly. I disagree with her because she's looking at one issue symptomatically without looking at all of the processes that relate to it. Globalization was probably the reason we had a long period of relative international peace. We got intertwined with China from the standpoint of an economic intertwinement that if allowed to unravel, would allow China and the United States to get totally at loggerheads with one another, like we're quickly becoming, as we become disentangled from an economic standpoint. Yes, globalization clearly dislocated a bunch of jobs around the world and relocated jobs around the world. And globalization clearly has tested the extent to which countries are viewed as putting the interests of the people inside that country first above the interests of all other people. That's nationalism, okay? And what we're now going to shift to, if we decide to really, if globalization becomes reversed, if we get into a problem of disentangling from one another, recreating the walls that we have to create around ourselves to become disentangled, which is a very strong political action, right? The reason we were not globalized before is because we had erected walls against globalization. We had tariffs. We had all kinds of protective fences put up. All we really did with globalization is remove those fences, okay, and let things happen as they may. If we get back to erecting the fences, and I noticed that some of the countries in Europe are talking about, you know, Poland is talking about stepping back from the European Union and creating walls again around Poland. If we start doing that, we're going to get back to the world of the 1920s, the 1930s, the 1910. Everybody looking out for their own interest, erecting tariff walls against one another. And now we start having the grounds for actual combat between peoples. And so I know that it was called neoliberalism, this concept of having of taking down the walls and essentially dropping down the tenor of the nationalism and moving more in the direction of letting the chips fall where they may internationally and from an economic standpoint. And I quite frankly think that in the long run, the world will be better off with this globalization than it will be with the renationalization. Because renationalization is what Donald Trump wants. It's what Vladimir Putin wants. It's what the autocratic leader of Poland is moving for. It's what Brazil's leader is talking about. The whole autocratic movement that we're talking about is a nationalistic response.
It's what the people in rural Wisconsin and rural America want.
So the nationalism is a response to the difficulties of competition. Because let's face it, globalization is the introduction of competition all across the world in all sorts of ways. The deglobalization, in fact, is what's going to be the champion of inflation, because when we resurrect these walls, inflation becomes a much stronger probability. Because when we go back and look at the inflation of the 70s, it was strong. It was because we could raise wages and raise prices without worrying about losing market share, because we didn't have the international competition sitting at the doorstep threatening to invade. That's what globalization did. That's why we had low inflation. People have talked about other reasons. Globalization is, I think, clearly the reason why we've had low inflation for these 30 years.
So there's also been the other side of globalization that has hurt and harmed many, many people in these nations and many people in this country. And because a segment of the business community has certainly done well during these periods of time, and the middle class in this country has basically all but disappeared. That's been the sacrifice or the exchange of this. And so I guess the question would be, Sandy, then the middle class people who have been sacrificed through this, if they think that it was the right thing to do.
Well, I think to be honest with you, that it's what it has tested is our political system. Our political system and the priorities we had set over this time didn't include retraining people. It really was a let the chips fall where they may process inside our country, this individualism that I've talked about. We've let the chips fall where they may. When people get laid off, they go into unemployment. They don't go into retraining, and so we have not armed the people in our economy with the things that are necessary let them fend well in a world economy. Let's look at other economies, though. You can look at Germany and other places. They've done quite well, and they had a middle class. They've had to contend with the intrusion of lots of competitive sourcing.
So, Sandy, hold that thought, because I want to come back to this on the other side. I think it's such a telling, it's the why.
It is
and,
the why.
Yeah, and that's why we need to have that conversation. Got to go to break. 844-967-2789 is the numbers. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.